The Get Down is brought to you by Digital Music Pool. Digital Music Pool is the ultimate record pool for professional DJs looking for the hottest tracks and exclusive hits updated daily in an easy-to-use platform. You can find exclusive edits from myself, Cream, Adam B., Andrew Marks, Angelo the Kid, Armin Averro, Chumpion, Dan FX, Castra, Pat C, and Samus J only on DMP. And we're giving you a chance to try their service for just $9.99 for the first month. All you have to do is click the link in the show notes or on the Get Down or Cream Instagram pages, create an account, and enter the promo code CREAM at checkout for your discounted month. DMP is my go-to record pool for new and exclusive music to play in my sets. So become a member for just $9.99 for the first month with the code CREAM and check it out for yourself. Click the link in the show notes or on the Get Down or Cream Instagram pages to sign up now. You will not be disappointed. If you love listening to The Get Down, you will love the video version of our show on YouTube even more. With all new audio and video upgrades, we've taken the show to the next level. On YouTube, you get to see our facial expressions, hand gestures, and real passion we have for this industry and for helping you grow your DJ business. Click the link in the show notes or on the Get Down Instagram page to watch the podcast now or search Get Down DJs on YouTube. We would greatly appreciate if you subscribe to our channel, like, and comment any questions you might have that we could bring up on the show. What's up, guys? Welcome to the 149th episode of The Get Down, brought to you by Digital Music Pool. My name's Cream.
Gary W. here.
Big shout to Digital Music Pool. They, withstood a lot down in Miami over the weekend and over the last week to really put on a great event, and then the weather just shit on everything, literally.
It was... So I went to the pre-party on Thursday. The setup was amazing. Had a lot of back end work to do in the afternoon, so didn't get to go like earlier, but I caught the last maybe four or five acts. By that time, all of our guys had come over. Angelo had a party across town that he was playing, so everybody had come over. We had met up, and the setup was just incredible. Like, they had the lower area where the stage was, and then the VIP area was upstairs, and that was looking down on the stage area, and then like you could see the ocean in the background, and it was just absolutely perfect, a perfect venue for an outdoor, you know, pool party type thing, but like on a bigger scale, obviously. And then Friday happened, and it was just a downpour. I was watching one of the basketball games in the hotel, and I was getting ready for dinner, and the news came on, and they were like, oh, like be ready for really strong winds, flash flooding, lightning, possible tornadoes in the area. And I'm like, whoa, what? I was like, we're supposed to be outside tomorrow for this. And I'm, you know, so we spoke to Legati. He's like, we got ponchos. So I just come ready to bear the elements, which I appreciated the levity he had with the amount of pressure, I'm sure, that he had on him.
Right.
About, you know, this is a year-long process, you know, in trying to put all of this stuff together and get all of these big names in place and just execute an excellent event like they do every year. And then out of nowhere, you get this freak storm, and you have to make adjustments. And they did, and we showed up on Friday, and the press room was fantastic. Big shout out to everybody we saw on there, because I felt like all of our connections and a lot of our friends and friends of the show, and like they were all doing something in the press room. Whether it was
interviewing someone,
exactly like iHeartRadio interview. Like they were like two of the guys that were doing the iHeartRadio interview station, like, you know, knew them. And then Nikos was doing the whatever it's maybe the Sirius XM stuff. And it was just like everybody was doing something. There were so many personalities in the room, and it was cool to see everybody. And our guys showed out pretty well on Friday in support. And Ligotti seemed to take it in stride on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing. There's nothing you could do at that point, right?
It's just
let's try to make this as good as possible. Let's try to make sure that we still get as many of the artists who were supposed to play, even if the times change. Let's make sure that we can still get them in the building. You know, I saw some video and I text you and I was like, man, never did I think I'd see Cascade back-to-back Deadmau5 in like a wedding venue.
In a straight-up wedding hall.
Yeah, a hotel event center.
Satellite bars, like the open bar at the wedding. Like, that's exactly what it was like. But it went well. The vibe was good in there, man. Like, everybody pushed up to the artists to watch, you know, each artist that they, you know, Kashmir was amazing. And Deadmau5 was great. Big shout to Deadmau5 for actually going to play the show, because I know how he gets sometimes, like where he's a little, I was like, he ain't showing up to this. There's no way. But no, he came out, they played a great set together and it was fun. And Armin opened the day, which was amazing to see Armin again and play the actual Sound of Music that I feel like he's made to play, which is more of that like trancey style. You know, 138-ish trancey style, and he was so entertaining. I loved his set. It was a lot of fun, man. It was a lot of fun.
It always is, you know. And when you get that many DJs and artists in a room, it's like, as long as the music's playing, like, nobody cares if you're in some fancy outdoor setup. As long as the sound's good and the DJs are playing, like, people will make a party out of it. So.
And that's what they did, you know. And the Step and Repeat was on fire all day, and there's so much action going on down there with press and interviews, and they have it set up so well. They've done this now, you know, obviously many years, and big shout to the entire team that executed that party, because it was, I mean, Ligotti was wheeling speakers in himself at one point into the venue, so like everybody pulled their part and did their thing, and they executed a great event.
As they always do.
As they always do.
It's cool, man. The EDMAs are like, I feel like one of the go-to parties now during, you know, leading up to Ultra starting. Whereas when we first started, it was like, there was a lot of cool artists coming through there, but it was like a small event. It was a bunch of, you know, New York City and New Jersey artists and DJs. And then some of the bigger artists would come through, whereas now it's like they got everybody. You name them, they're there, you know?
Yeah.
Or they're winning an award and popping in and doing an interview or whatever the case may be. So shout to DMP, shout to Ligotti and the crew. What were some other takeaways as far as, you know, people you met, the networking, maybe some of the, like, the Sound of Music that was getting played? Was there a certain style that was more popular than others? Because I heard from some of our guys what was kind of going down with what people were playing. But
I want to start with like the guys who had never been to Miami Music Week, some of our younger DJs. And, you know, you go down there and you look to network with maybe more national people. You know, that's kind of the intent, I think, when you go into it, being that there are going to be so many different people from so many different places there. But what I did learn is that our younger guys really did a good job at networking with the people that are from our market that they didn't know. And why that's important there is because, well, sometimes within our market, Not all the big wigs show up to all the events, all the networking events.
Right.
And oftentimes, you know, maybe you're DJing and you can't go out and support that person, or you can't meet them because they're DJing or whatever it might be. You're taking this opportunity here that you have. And even though you have access to that person within your market, you are pretty much, not always, but you are an arm's length away from them for long, long periods of time. Right. So I was able to introduce a lot of our younger guys to some of the New York City and surrounding area bigwigs, decision makers. And they were like super thankful for it, like to be able to get that introduction and share some music and pass a USB along and things like that. All the things that we talked about last week on the podcast,
right.
Our guys really executed well. And I think sometimes that gets overlooked. I think sometimes it's always like, well, go find the A&R for spin-in and go find, you know, the head guy for revealed or whatever it might be. And it's like, yeah, that all of that stuff is important too, but it's just as important to really put a name, put a face to the name for the people that make decisions in your market as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I love that. I mean, that hopefully can open up some opportunities locally. And then I also talked to some of the guys who were like, oh, I passed a USB to Max Styler and I passed a USB to Laidback Luke. And
right.
And so that's awesome too, where you could just be in a party and have a 5-minute conversation with one of those guys and connect and be able to give them your music, you know?
I was talking to a couple other like first timers and they're like, oh, I feel really weird just going up and like starting a conversation. I'm like, well, look, that's what this is for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just like have that, but have your 30-second elevator pitch ready or figure out like what's like maybe a relationship that you might have, or maybe you've done some music or a remix of somebody's song, like that person's song over there that you want to go talk to and be like, hey, I did an edit of your song. But that actually happened in one of the scenarios. One of our guys was like, a little bashful about going over and talking to this singer. And I was like, just go tell her that like you did an edit of her track and you're really proud of it. And you want to, you know, pass it along and see what she thought about it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe she wants a collab down the road or something like that. You know, it was like, just like, that's why we're here. You're not annoying anybody. It's not like you saw this person at a diner and they're sitting down to eat and you're going to bother them. You know,
they're there to meet and greet and talk to people too.
Right.
I feel like the best way to go up to any of those people is try to, like you said, either make a connection with someone they know or just be like, hey, I loved this X track that you just put out. I played him all my sets. Or I grew up listening to you as an artist when I was whatever. Just like showing that you're a fan of the music is an easy way to open the door to having a conversation. Like, you inspired me to become a DJ kind of thing. Like, artists and anyone loves to hear that stuff. If you're motivating other people to get into a certain industry or to create a certain style of music, like if they're a normal human being, they're going to talk to you about it.
Yeah. Listen, if they don't want to talk, like, they're not going to be at that event.
Right.
Because that's what that event is. You know, even though it's exhausting, even though sometimes it's awkward, even though you can be a little off put by like being in this scenario, and it's sometimes daunting, especially if you're a first timer. Like, it can be a little overwhelming. It could be, it's overwhelming. It's a lot. It's a lot to take in, and you kind of feel like you're a very small fish in a big pond kind of a situation. But like, you just have to be confident and have ready what you want to say, and you know, execute that way.
Those moments and those conversations were always really motivating for me when I was down there in previous years, mainly because it's like, these guys are just like us, you know? They just happen to be further along in their journey than some of us are or have been. And when you connect as humans, you're like, they're just a DJ who was a local DJ and made some music and started, you know, making moves and now playing bigger shows. And it makes you realize that like, you could also get there, you know? The path is laid out. And like we always say, everyone's path is a little different, but it is doable. It's doable. And I think going down there always made me feel like it was more doable than other times.
Yeah. Obviously the weather was the big... This is going to be the Miami Music Week that, you know, was just an absolute washout kind of a thing. But... The show went on as it does. People adjusted. You know, it wasn't just the EDMAs that got messed with. It was a lot of different, it's every event on the beach. You know,
I'll tell you who won. All the clubs that had all these artists playing indoors. That's who won.
Definitely.
They were all, I'm sure, super oversold, extra tiers of tickets sold. People were saying that they were in a lot of these places like sardines.
Yeah, I couldn't bring myself to it. I wanted to go to space, and I wanted to go to Factory Town, I think it's called, and yeah. I just didn't. I was like, it's too, I like the day stuff, you know? I like the day stuff, I like the networking, I like the hanging out, seeing the DJs play during the day, and then, you know, hopefully line up for what we do, line up a dinner at night and talk to the people that that we need to talk to. I find that more effective. I have a hard time at night, like doing the networking thing because it's just, it's too loud. I don't, you know.
Yeah, I feel like the nighttime thing is more so like, let's go see the DJs that we want to just see and hear play, you know?
That's right.
Kind of more of what a lot of our guys were doing. And, you know, we could still going and popping into some of the parties where we know people are DJing or, you know, hosting or whatever the case may be.
The music at the 4B event was excellent. Excellent.
I feel like it always is.
I liked it better this year than years past. I hesitated on this one because I think last one that we went to, it was solid. Like the music was pretty good, but I felt like I knew a lot of the edits that were played that year. No offense to any of our guys. Big shout to all of our guys that year. There was a ton of our guys' edits played that night. But I was like, oh, like I kind of want to go hear some different music. And then the DJs that he had with him were amazing. And the production was good.
Was it in the same place as last year or a different place?
It was not. It was outdoor, which was even better.
Nice.
Really enjoyed the fact that it was outside. And it was just a lot of fun. A lot of different music. And I feel like what I heard a lot there was your 72 BPM.
Yeah, a lot of Jersey, a lot of speed house, techno style.
Some of that stuff you had like, I feel like the dubstep kind of
played
sound.
That show. I saw GTA, Shipwreck.
GTA was awesome.
Yeah, they're great.
GTA was awesome. My favorite of the night, and I know Ferrari and Solana are sick of hearing this, but my favorite was Say My Name. Say My Name was awesome. Like, and he played more of a DJ set. And once again, here we are, me saying that I liked the artist that decided to play more of a DJ set.
Say My Name, what? Used to be one half of Flossadamus? Is that right or is that wrong? Am I making that up?
I don't know. So let me explain. So he started like in a very dubstep, you know, he comes out big. And then it was like he almost adjusted a little bit and he like re-engaged the crowd and he had everybody like going. And then by the end of it, he brought it back to his, like, to that, like, more trappy dubby sound. And it was great. Really, 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 really enjoyed that set. Might've been my favorite. And then Luke came out at the end and he played a couple of classics, which was awesome.
Nice.
I felt like it was 2014 again, you know, 2015, he's playing all of his absolute classics and bangers. And it was nice to see that. And 4B was obviously entertaining as well. I mean, that's not, don't even have to
yeah,
say
I
that.
Mean, you know, he's bringing energy excellent. No matter what.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. A lot of the takeaways for me when I come back from Miami is like, man, I heard a lot of this style of music. And so in Miami, you're hearing a ton of unreleased music that's going to now release over the course of the rest of this year. And you sort of get a taste for, you know, what's coming, what styles of music are coming.
I think it's staying in that like one, you know, that 70 to 140 to 150 range, right?
Yeah.
With like playing those dubstep records, then that you can also mix into those, you know, those 140 BPM tracks.
So like healthy amount of the speed house, the techno, like drum and bass. I heard there was a bunch of like
yeah,
artists
drum and bass.
Ultra, the big stage playing drum and bass, like Joel Corey and people you wouldn't expect.
I saw that. I was a little shocked by that. Tiesto's set was heavy in like the heavier sounds.
Yeah.
That's where his production is going, obviously. His mixer shuts off in the middle of his set, which was kind of wild because of the rain. I can't even believe that he was DJing with that much rain on the equipment.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen any video from it. It was pretty crazy. But he got away with it for a long ass time. I don't know what Ultra was thinking, not having something over his like just immediate area.
Right.
Like the rain was coming from every direction. Don't get me wrong. And it was coming down quick. Like I was going to dinner the one night and like it was like a flash flood, like literally up over the tires of the cars. That's how much rain we got in such a short period of time. So I get it, but like we knew it was coming Thursday. So how they didn't build something in that period of time blows my mind.
Right.
But he was playing a hell of a set. That old man still got it.
He's the king
still
for a reason, right?
It. Yeah. His production is leaning right exactly where, I mean, he still leads the what the sound is and what it's going to be. He's still a pioneer no matter what. He's still a tastemaker. He does a great job. So yeah, I mean, that style is really what, that's the full takeaway. Is like, it's just a little harder. It's a little faster. You know, it's not so commercially. And I enjoyed that. Like, I didn't hear many vocals that I knew. And that was awesome. It felt like a Miami Music Week of many years ago. And I thought that's what it was going to be like because of how these styles have evolved over the last year. I knew, I was like, all right, great. Like, we're going to hear some real trance again. We're going to hear, you know, hard trance, and we're going to hear just a hard style, everything. Actually, somebody played Happy Hardcore, which I turned to a few people around me. They didn't know what that was. They played like, somebody was playing like 15 minutes of a Happy Hardcore set, which is like Candy Raver music. Like, dun, 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 dun. Like 170. I was like, what is this, like 185? 190? I was like, this is so goddamn quick. I was like, I gotta walk away. It's just too quick. So it got like up into that stratosphere, which was like warehouse rave music from the early 90s, which I haven't heard since forever, especially out. I don't know if I've ever heard it out like in a club setting. Maybe in a warehouse. Like, yeah,
that hard style is even too much for me.
Crazy. Crazy. I was like, that's a lot, dude. But it was great. It was great to hear all the different styles again. And it makes you miss kind of going out. But I would never want to deal with that festival scene. It's too much for me at this point.
Yeah, our guys were all out there. They had a good time.
Yeah, they're young. They could do it.
Big shout to Olive Oil and Silvertone, who had their Rhythm Machine remix played by Dom Dalla and
Green Velvet.
And Green Velvet, which is super
huge.
Dope.
Yeah.
So shout to those guys. I saw some video coming out of there from that.
I saw that they're like, of course we decided not to go this year. this happens. Which is going to happen. I mean, you're not going to be able to be at every party anyway. So,
right.
You know, but if that's like something that's on your radar and you would have been at, I would be completely disappointed by that.
Yeah. At least they have some video, some content coming out of it. I saw a couple angles of video of Dom playing it. So that's cool.
Awesome.
I mean, that's awesome. That's like what it's all about, right? That's as producers, when we get to hear some of the bigger artists play our stuff, it's like the best feeling ever, you know, especially. Yeah. A remix of you know, one of those tracks, and the artist supports it. I mean, that's a huge deal. So I know Olive Oil has been really working really hard in the studio, and they have a ton of music and, you know, a lot of music coming out. So hopefully we'll see those guys make a little step forward here with their production, and hopefully start booking some out of town bigger shows.
I have one last takeaway from Miami Music Week before we move on. And it's something that we're going to touch on later on here in the show. But my other takeaway was that I saw a lot of the old school house, like true house DJs playing on the new rotary mixer from Pioneer/Alpha Theta. So it was nice to see. Little throwback to kind of the heart of when kind of house music was big in like the early 90s. And those guys have broke that back out. And we're going to talk about that later on because there's a lot of different features on that are really cool.
Man, rotary mixers. I'll have some stories for that conversation too.
I can't wait to hear part of the reason really why I wanted to talk about it. I'm glad I saw it a few times down there. Is because I know that you and rotary mixers, it really it stirs the pot a little bit. So I'm hoping to get a couple of great rants or something. I'm hoping to get a rant out of this.
We'll see. I'm feeling pretty chill today, so we'll see if we can get me fired up. All right. So I know, like last week, we talked about Miami, and then we talked about making all those connections and a little bit about the follow up. But I want to dig into, now that Miami's over, or now that any networking event is over, some of the things that we need to be doing, and then how we can kind of take that strategy and those the way that you attack those connections and kind of put them towards making new connections in your own market, right?
Right.
Like the summer's coming. So, you know, the vacation spots are going to start picking up. Now's the time that we all want to be reaching out to those bookers and venues to try and position ourselves as someone that's going to get booked in these vacation spots, whether it's, you know, Jersey Shore, the Hamptons on Long Island, or whatever the, you know, the lake or wherever your market, the people go during the summer. And maybe that's just your own market that stays busy. And if that's the case, like that's dope. Right. But I don't know. I think it's really important. We talked about last week that whoever you were meeting to get their contact information, right? So get their email, get their cell phone number. And now this week, you know, it's now Tuesday. So in the next day or two, you want to be following up with these people. Hey, DJ, whoever, great meeting you at the blank party. You know, I really enjoy talking about XYZ. I wanted to follow up and send you some of the tracks that I made that we talked about. Or I wanted to follow up to see if you wanted to start work on that remix. Here's a couple ideas I have. Hmm. You want to send those emails, send those texts, pretend like they have no idea who you are just in case they don't remember you. Maybe they were blackout drunk. Like, who knows?
Right.
Maybe they talked to 1,000 people and you were just another one of those people. But if you do this follow-up, you're going to be 5% of the people that actually follow up. And this is how you grow relationships, and this is how you move things forward with the follow-up. If they don't answer you, wait a week or 2 weeks, send another message. Hey, man, hate to bother you. Just wanted to follow up again. You know, didn't hear from you. Here's whatever. You know, persistent, but not annoying.
As we always say.
As we always say, right?
And there's a few different ways that you can follow up, right? There's the DM, there's the email, there's the text message if you were lucky enough to exchange phone numbers for whatever reason, depending on how like personal the relationship is. And I think you want to utilize these different ways, maybe depending upon what the situation was, right? So I think if it's a very disconnected relationship where it was a really like one-off, you don't really know anybody in that person's stratosphere, right? And you're just kind of cold met them. I almost feel like an email is probably like the first way I'd go about it, and you know, and have it structured a little more professionally. And I could be wrong about this. You can correct me if you would go about this differently. But like I would do this in more of an email format and saying all the things that you said and then linking, you know, whatever you want to share with that person. I feel like if there's a little bit more of a personal connection, then you have the DM / you know, text message that you could share whatever you need to share with that person.
I would say that makes sense. But really, it's however you left the conversation. If you just connected on Instagram, then message on Instagram. If you grabbed a phone number, then shoot them a text or even a call, depending on what the conversation might entail. If you grabbed an email address, do it that way. But yeah, I would agree with you. If you don't really know the person, the email is probably the best way, especially if you got that email address. I honestly, like, email was a big thing for me, and it's always going to be a big thing for me, but a lot of my conversations have been through DM. It's just like the quickest way to kind of get a response. I find that I'm more likely to get a response on IG than I am on an email.
Would you follow up? So like if you emailed, let's say, and you didn't hear anything, would you follow up via DM maybe a couple days later?
Yeah.
Is that probably
sure.
a good way, strategy to go about it?
It might not be a bad way to send the same message in both places.
That's true.
That could be another strategy.
Cover all bases.
It could be another strategy. Hey, I sent you an email, but I also wanted to send you the link to my Dropbox here.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a really good strategy as well. The other thing I would say for anyone making music, even if you're just making edits, if you met any artist and you connected with them on a personal level, you had more than a 1 minute conversation with them, I would probably make some music from that particular artist and send like as soon as possible. And that could be your follow-up. Like you're showing some sort of a value, right? Hey, it was great talking to you for 5 minutes at the EDMAs. I told you I really love this track. I made an edit. I hope you like it, you know? Or yeah. I made a remix. Let me know what you think. Anything like that, I think, is another way to just take the extra step to show that the connection was important to you. And doing those little things, I think, makes a big difference.
Something that you've always been good at is the smaller intangibles and thinking about the things that maybe the average person wouldn't think of, like to remix that person that you met, you know, song or whatever it might be, or artist's song.
Yeah, the last time I played with Nervo, they were like, "What edit is this?" And it happened to be one of my edits. So after I connected with them, and afterwards I sent them a folder of like three tracks, the one that they liked, and then two others in that same style that I thought maybe they would play. And that's just, I think that's just, you know, doing your full due diligence and being thorough and really trying to show value to these people that you meet.
Yeah.
We always talk about that. How can you show value? It's not what can they do for you. It's what can you do for them? If you think about all these relationships in that way, you're going to get further for sure.
It's hard sometimes because like we stated earlier, when you're at the networking event, you feel so small fish that it's hard to think that, hey, what do I have that I can really give to this higher end person, right? And I think sometimes it's hard for you to... You feel a little stunted. You feel a little, you know, intimidated by trying to come up with something like, okay, I can do this for them. Like this is something that will be of value to that person. It's hard to kind of think outside the box in that way. And that's why I think having like somebody to bounce ideas off of and have a conversation around, okay, like what's the best strategy to go forth about following up maybe with this person, and what am I good at that I can provide to this person? Sometimes it's hard to see yourself. So having that conversation with somebody else would be helpful.
Yeah. I mean, good music is good music, right? If you send,
yeah,
it doesn't matter how big you are. If the music's good, usually, and if the artist connects to it, they might play it. There's a better chance of playing it, or they'll listen to it, you know?
Yeah.
I think another tactic, especially if you're making remixes or original music and you're trying to share that, if you create private SoundCloud links and share those with any of these people, it'll show you if they listen, if they download, many times who it is, or at least the location of where they are. And you could kind of have a better idea like, hey, I only sent this track to five people. One person's from the Netherlands, one person's from the UK, one person's from Miami. And you see like, oh, Miami, there's one listen from that city. Like you kind of know who it is, you know?
Yeah.
Even if they have burner accounts or, you know, accounts that don't have their name on it. So I think that's another pretty smart strategy.
Yeah. So
this not only goes for Miami, this goes for, again, like I said, any networking event, anywhere where you're going to meet artists, DJs, bookers, producers. But I think how I'd like to talk about this now is just how can we use some of these tactics in our current markets to help us book more gigs or book higher profile gigs? And I think part of this is you create this strategy for like leaving Miami Music Week and just take a very similar strategy and just tailor it towards the venues or the bookers and always consistently think, how can I bring value to this venue? How can I bring value to this booker? Make sure you let them know those things. Hey, I just released a track that had 100,000 plays on SoundCloud, on SoundCloud. Like that's something that a booker might take into consideration when booking, you know?
It is so underutilized when it comes to local DJing.
Hey, I feel like my latest TikTok just hit 250,000 views. Here's a link.
Right. I feel like that it gets overlooked by DJs. They're like, okay, we share it all with each other. We're all sharing links and whatnot with each other and on our social medias, but a lot of times these venue owners and venue managers are sometimes very disconnected from social media.
Right.
So being able to share, like you said, giving the links to the management and the ownership and saying that like, hey, this track has went semi-viral or this has gone viral. Like, I think you should check it out. I think you'll like it. You know, you know what styles of music that your management and your ownership likes, right? They're all fans of music. That's why they all have so many goddamn opinions on who the DJ is.
Right.
But you should be sharing music with them. I feel
right.
like
your mix shows, your anything that shows your skill and shows what value you could bring or just how interested people are in actually consuming your content, whatever it is. that stuff is valuable to share with bookers. And we sometimes forget about that, right?
We do, for sure.
And like you were saying, I think DJs many times think like, oh, well, I'm putting out my monthly rundown and I just put a video out of me traveling to wherever and playing a show. But like, you're thinking very self-centered in that case. And we all should be attacking our market, or if you're trying to leave your market, outside your market, the places that you'd like to play or you think you're a fit to play.
But you're going to utilize the same tactics outside your market than you are inside your market, right?
For
sure. So why not really hone in on what works in your market and then go utilize those strategies outside the market?
Yeah. Even Steve is here in New York, and it's been really motivating to me to watch him come here and watch him put in all the work to try and meet all the right people here and to start getting bookings, and just seeing the amount of effort that someone who's very successful, who's been very successful in other markets and nationally, to come here and put more work in than most of the local DJs that are in our market and still trying to get booked in some of these places in New York and New Jersey. So it doesn't matter how big you are. It doesn't matter how long you've been in the game. It doesn't matter what venues you're playing right now. If you want to still continue growing, you have to attack the people and the places that you want to grow into. And if you're not doing that, how can you possibly expect to get booked or to get signed or for an artist to play your music?
We have to remember that not everybody is consuming DJ culture like we are, you know, such. So not all of the decision makers know who even Steve might be, even though he's big in many different markets and nationally. He comes here and it's like, well, you're pretty much nobody. Nobody knows you in this market that is maybe not a DJ. I think that's the way you got to look at it, right? Nobody kind of cares what you've done unless you've done something within the market.
Yeah, most owners and venue bookers, they have no idea. They often rely on other people, whether it's an entertainment director or staff or another DJ that they trust, on what other DJs to bring in, you know?
So you need to put that extra work in. Like, even though you have an established name somewhere else, doesn't mean that it carries weight in the next place that you go. So you have to work twice as hard, even though you are already an established act.
Yeah, I mean, I still have a strategy to actively attack the venues that I want to get into. There's a small amount of venues that are booking national acts at a decent rate.
Right.
And like, you got to figure out who those people are. What venues are they? Does it fit your style? And who are the bookers? And then start hitting those people up. And a lot of times those bookers are DJs. And if it's a DJ, it'll be way easier to connect with them than if it's a random, you know, if it's a Tao group that there's a, you know, someone in charge of entertainment, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
come up with a strategy and be consistent in reaching out to these people, whether it's a sheet or a document, whether it's a notebook that you write in. Come up with a plan, come up with a strategy, and then execute. And it's not just spend one day, one time hitting these people up. It's, all right, I hit this person up in March. I'm going to wait 6 weeks and I'm going to hit them up again. I hit this person up last year for the summer. I'm going to hit him up again before this summer. He told me to follow up for next season. And like, you have to have a place or a way of tracking those conversations and sort of where you left off so that you could always continue to move that conversation forward. Sometimes it's going to be a no. Many times it's going to be a no. Sometimes it's going to be a hit me up like later kind of thing, which is sort of a no also, right? It's just a different way of saying no. It's no for right now. It's not no forever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you have different parts of the year that you should be regularly doing this, and you can just write it in your calendar. And the first of in January, maybe you're thinking about what's going to go on in March because there's three St. Paddy's Days in our market in a row. So you want to maximize the amount of times you're getting booked for that. And then maybe in March, you're thinking about the summertime because that's what everybody's starting to think about. And then in the middle of the summer, you're thinking fall. And then, you know, so you reach back out then. And then Miami Music Week comes back around. You know what I mean? So like you have different points in the year where there's different things happening all the time. And those are great times to reach out.
Yeah.
but get ahead of it and have a plan and reuse that plan over and over again.
It's a lot of work. It is. It really is. And you have to be organized, and you have to spend the time to like do the homework. There's hours of homework that go into this before you could even start reaching out to people.
Yeah.
It's not like just randomly blasting a DM to the venue and be like, hey, I'm a great DJ from New Jersey and I make Bass House and book me. It's hey, here's my EPK. Can you let me know who is the person that books the DJs at this venue? Can you put me in touch with them? What's their Instagram? Can I reach out to them, to that person? It's a lot.
Yeah.
But
it's a lot. But if you want to grow and you want to be a successful DJ, these are the things that you need to do.
For sure.
So let's talk about Charlotte a little bit. You had probably one of your biggest shows ever, I would say. And you played a trio down in Charlotte. I want to hear about the room. I want to hear just everything. Like your what were your big takeaways? And
yeah, trio.
How did you like the city? I know you were there a very short period of
Trio's
time.
Trio's dope, man. It's a new club, you know. Same owner as Trio in Charleston. And to me, it's the perfectly set up nightclub where you have a raised stage, you have incredible lighting and sound. They have like an LED wall that goes up behind the stage, but then kind of curves into the crowd, which creates nice, really dope visuals.
Yeah.
The trio brand and the people that work there care about hospitality more than anyone I've ever worked with. And it continues at Trio, and they do an amazing job. And I look forward to working with those people every time because they just do such a great job. And everybody that works for them, I feel like loves the music and loves the scene and like goes to shows and goes to festivals. And that creates this environment of people who want to be there and are excited to hear DJs and see artists. And you could feel that when you meet the staff and you talk to the staff like before the set and after. So
that's what Eric's built his company on, for his love of music.
Yeah.
Right. That's why he got into this business.
Yeah.
And he worked in hospitality and he was very good at it. And they're really amazing at making your experience not feel transactional.
For sure.
Which I feel like when you deal with certain ownership and certain management, things can feel very transactional. Like, what are you doing for me? Right? And then if you're doing such this and this for me, then I'll do this for you. They make it like, and we've gone down there and we didn't even play. The last time you and I visited Charleston, we didn't even play. And they still took care of us like kings.
Yeah.
So like I think that they are just, they're there for the music. They're there for the hospitality. They really deeply care about what they do. And it makes it feel very welcoming.
They care about the relationships a lot. And that's something that I think is rare in what we do, where many times like I'd feel used. Like this venue is using me. This booker is using me for something, right?
Yeah.
It feels that way a lot of times. Not always, but all the people at Trio, it's the complete opposite. They make it feel like they really care. They're really happy to be working with you, and they're going to create the best experience for you so that you, the artist, can create the best experience for their customers. And it's just a great way to do business, you know?
It's like a boutique hospitality company. That's kind of how it feels. It feels very tailor-made to you, right? They make the performer and the artist feel very at home, and that you're what matters tonight, right? Like it's not Deadmau5 who's playing tomorrow, or it's not Kascade who's playing tomorrow.
Right, but they'll treat you the same way.
They treat you the same way. It's you matter today, and when tomorrow comes, we'll deal with tomorrow.
Yeah,
you
know? And that's Gordon exactly Sinian's how it should be. In town the day after me. So that was a huge booking for them, a huge show for them. And the ARs there were like talking about it, and we were just kind of talking about other DJs that have come through, and it was like they're happy to be there. And like you said, they're sort of they're treating me as they would treat Gorgon City the next night, kind of thing.
It's funny, I met them on Thursday at the
Did you?
Yeah. Briefly, just like, you know, introduction and out.
But you know, but, like yeah. same thing that we just talked about in communicating and creating the network and building that relationship and moving it forward. Like I left, I finished my set, right? Went home the next day, 2 days later, like Eric, A&R, Trio, Booker, all the people that I need that were connected with before and during the set were like, thank you guys, amazing job, appreciate the hospitality. This person did an amazing job taking care of me. Like One Love, who was, you know, playing before me, played a great set. I want to show him some love. Like he played a great set, good dude. We went to dinner. So yeah, like just that, continuing that conversation and moving the relationship forward, thanking them.
Following up.
It's the follow-up, right? Even as a DJ, same thing. Like if you get booked for a new venue or a big set in your own city, like you should be doing the same thing. Thanking the booker, shouting out the people that helped you or did a great job. Any of the staff members, you know, like people value that. So Angelo wasn't in town, which sucked. He was in New York. I think I spent like 12 hours in the city or 14 hours in the city. So we went to dinner at some spot that was really good. But besides that, like airport, hotel, venue, sound check, dinner, airport. Airport.
I was watching the NCAA games with my dad, and I'm like, how does Cream not stay in Charlotte Saturday to go see the games? I forgot you had Pigpen in town.
I didn't even know that Charlotte was a host city until I was in my hotel lobby. And I'm like, there's a lot of people in the lobby, like really caring about college basketball right now.
Carolina played somebody. I forgot who it was. There were some good games. I don't know if JMU was playing there. I think you would have known that.
JMU got smoked.
They did get smoked.
Unfortunately.
But yeah, I was like, why didn't he stay? But we had
Pigpen from Detroit in town, and I was supposed to be with him Friday and Saturday. But when I got the Trio booking, I was like, dude, I gotta go. Like, I'll see you Saturday. And it's funny, like I tried to give the same hospitality that not only like Pigpen took care of me a ton when I was out there. He did an amazing job, but like taking the cues from what Trio does, and like how can we do something similar for the artists that come through and the DJs that come through our city, right? Like, how can we get them to leave here saying, wow, like Cream and Gary, like really took care of me. They went above and beyond anything they needed to do in order to make us feel welcome and like take us to dinner or pick us up from the airport. Like some of that stuff I didn't get to do with Pigpen, unfortunately, because I was out of town. But I know Casper took care of him on Friday when I was out of town. And then I was with him in the city and kind of showed him around. We took him to Joe and Pat's, my go-to pizza spot on the Lower East Side.
I see that coming up on the expense report. I know I know it was Cream out there.
It's real good. But yeah, man, it was like a really strong hospitality weekend. It made me realize like that stuff is still matters and it should drive what we do, you know?
So that's what we do. We work in hospitality. It should be of the utmost importance.
It never is, though, Gary. It never is.
I know.
And I think that's part of the reason why, you know, we see the struggles of some places. Not all of the reason, but part of the reason.
It's important not to get jaded when things aren't going that way. Still extend the same courtesies to the places that maybe aren't so hospitable to you, right? It's easy to start to pick apart things that are wrong with their business or that nightclub or their equipment. And you see it all the time. It happens all the time. It's like, well, that place shouldn't say anything because X, Y, and Z. And it's like, but still, like, follow up the next day and say, thank you for having me. That's, you know, we had a great time. Like, maybe we played, like, during this set. Like, it was such a, you know, a fun time or whatever. This person was really great at the bar. They were super attentive, not only to me, but to my friends and the people around them. Or that bartender made the night this much better for that. Yeah. Like, just all of those things. Just do those things still, even if the venue isn't doing it for you.
I'm lucky enough where I've gotten to align myself with mostly places that provide really strong hospitality. Like those are the places that I want to go be at again, you know?
Yeah.
The places that are doing that, even locally, I'm saying, I'm not even talking about the travel stuff because they're going to most times take care of you on the travel stuff, no matter what. But Trio goes to the extra level and you know, I want to align myself with the venues and the people in our own market that try and take it to the next level, no matter what, you know, no matter what the venue is.
Right. Agreed.
I will work harder for those people, like straight up.
That's across the board, right? That's anybody. That's just human nature.
Right.
It's human nature. Like if you get taken care of, you're going to take care of the people you work for.
All right. Can we get a rant out of me right now?
I don't know. I don't know if we can. You seem pretty chill today.
I can get fired up real quick.
All right. Well, I don't get excited about equipment ever. Ever. You know this. Like I would still play on the same CDJs for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know?
What are the 800s or the thousands?
I still play on 800s. That's what I have in my home office.
Gary would play on 800s and a DJM for life if he could.
That's fine. I don't need anything more than that because, you know, it's just the simplicity of me. But this Euphonia Alpha Theta / Pioneer mixer that just came out, rotary, has impressed me. The look of it impressed me. The fact that they're putting the marketing dollars behind this mixer has impressed me even. And then I watched a couple of reviews. This was after seeing people like Danny Krivit, Dennis Ferrer, Little Louis Vega. There was like one or two others that were playing on this mixer. Like I said earlier in the episode, these are like old school house head DJs, right? Like very to the core, love their analog. And you should love your analog. As a house DJ, you should love your analog. Because Danny Krivit said it best. He's like, it's warm. And I was like, I know what that means because I've played in a couple of rotaries and you just know what warm means, you know? Digital's not warm. Never has been, doesn't feel it. It feels very cold. It feels very, how would you describe that? It's just like
more
choppy.
More harsh.
Choppy, harsh, yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. Analog back in the day, you would use you were playing vinyl records. So you were getting the warmth of the vinyl record along with the sound quality of the rotary mixer. So you want to talk about like top of the line, most ridiculous sound ever. That's what you would get produced out of that. The downfall of the rotary mixer is that it's fucking expensive. It always has been. It's always been in the thousands of dollars. So people saying that with the sticker shock of the $3,700 or whatever it is, it's like, well, that's what they are. That's what a rotary mixer costs. I think rotary mixers, when I first started DJing, were like $1,500, which is crazy money for 25 years ago. So they haven't really moved as far as price point's concerned. It hasn't gotten more quote unquote expensive. And some of the things that I really, some takeaways from some of the reviews that they've mixed digital and analog within this mixer, which is great. So you have the digital for your modern sakes, and you have the analog for the sakes that we were just talking about. So for sound quality and for, you know, getting that warm sound. So like I'm dying to go and play on this. I just want to hear it. And the one thing that the one of the reviewers was hammering home, he's like, you're not going to hear how good this sounds on YouTube, you know? He's like, there's just no possible way. It's like, do not comment that it doesn't sound anything like whatever, the DJM or whatever. Or it sounds exactly like the DJM. They said, like, it's the sound quality, like you have to be there in person to hear it. It's you know, saying how incredible it was. They're saying that this is the best sounding mixer out, period. I was a little shocked that there's onboard effects on this thing, but that's where that digital component comes in. The fact that you have those built into a rotary mixer is incredible. In my personal opinion, before I go through the rest of this stuff, actually, hold on. I'll save that because I might get a rant out of you for this. The onboard display is also a first. There hasn't been like an onboard display like they have on this mixer on any other rotary mixer. Usually you would have like a meter is kind of what was normal. And I personally think that this should be the industry standard if you are an EDM room, an electronic dance music room of any sort. If you have strictly house music DJs, I think this should be the standard. Because this puts the art of mixing at the forefront.
Yeah, but I don't think how many DJs would actually use this. I don't think one DJ that started producing or DJing in the last 5 or 10 years would want to even. Why would they try and want to learn a new mixer when they're used to playing on? They could pick any mixer that they want. They played on the same mixer their whole lives.
I feel like we always have the argument of, oh, you're not going to pick that controller or that mixer because the sound card sucks, right? There's been many conversations I have had with that being the paramount discussion point in picking out a controller or a mixer.
Yeah, but if you're playing digital files, like how... You're not playing vinyl. You're playing digital files where the sound is going to be more harsh anyway. So like, how is that affected as far as playing off that mixer?
I think that's where the digital / analog comes into play, right? It's taking your sound quality of your digital files and it's improving what the live sound is.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I can see why the older DJs use it because they used to use the rotary and they liked it and they probably missed it. And now there's this new cool tech that has come out for them to go back to rotary. But if someone's never used rotary, I don't think there's enough that would get them to be like, I'm going to change everything I know from my DJM 900 or my Zone mixer and go learn how to DJ on a rotary. I don't know. I haven't looked at the effects or how they work, but like, I don't know.
Do you think that there's enough difference to really, like, if you know how to mix songs together, does it really matter if it's a knob or an upfader?
It's just preference, really. And I don't think as a DJ that you're really going to hear the difference in a nightclub or in a, you know, in a bar, especially, obviously. But
yeah, no, this is not a bar. This is not a bar mixer. By no means is this a bar mixer. This is for a nightclub with big sound.
If I walked into a nightclub and they booked me to come play out of state and I showed up and there was a rotary mixer, I would laugh in their face. And but I'd you say, you should fire your sound guy because this is never not working.
You wouldn't even try it?
No. Me and RM talk about this all the time, right? There is a specific setup that I am my best on, that I prefer to use.
Right.
Right? It's the 900 and 3000s. DJM 900, 3000s. You put that in front of me, you're going to get the best version of Cream that you could possibly get. And right. If I'm going to another state or a new venue I've never played or a high-end venue that's expecting a high-quality DJ, like, do you want 100% of Cream or do you want like 75%? Because if you put some shitty controller in front of me, it's going to be at least 75%, maybe less. Because I have to think. It's not second nature for me to just, my hands are moving. It's muscle memory. I do this every day. I don't even have to look at the mixer. Whereas, and I could think about, how's my crowd responding to these songs? Am I in the right place? Do I need to move? Like, that's what I'm thinking on. If I'm thinking about some equipment that I'm not used to using, it's like, oh my God, am I hitting the right button? Is this going to sound right? Did I bring that in too fast? Is the volume knob, you know, gets louder at a different point than on my normal mixer that I'm used to.
Right,
it's like, I'm thinking about all this other shit that takes away from my performance. I'm on the mic less. I'm looking at my library less. I'm deciding on the next three songs less. And I'm thinking more about like, am I doing this right? Am I going to fuck this up? It's just not.
You're thinking from a quick mix DJ perspective. This is not
right, but how many
DJ.
DJs are long mixing? Not a lot. Like what percentage? Very few, in my opinion.
Real? I mean, what we call a short mix, and what you're talking about like a minute. Like what's your normal mix time? Would you say
8 bars, 16 bars max, which is what 30 seconds, 20 seconds.
Yeah, like that's not what this is.
I'm ripping through songs.
Yeah.
But like, I'm thinking even in like a Brooklyn where it's a minimal or a tech spot, like maybe those would be rooms where this would work. Maybe. I don't know.
I'd say definitely in any place that is that you are playing longer tracks, which I think is a good percentage of house music producers and DJs.
Yeah, but like nobody at the Ultra Main Stage is long mixing.
Tiesto's not playing more than 2 minutes of a song, 3 minutes of a song.
Maybe the whole song, but he's going to mix in and out of the song in 8 or 16 bars. Like he's not up there. Like I'm thinking more like Steve Angello, where he's playing four decks and like he's playing the vocal on one, and like maybe that would make more sense.
Yeah, that for sure.
But like I don't think that would make sense for mainstream in any way.
That would make for sure more sense. You make a good point here, where like because you can be so particular about which. Like where your levels on like vocals you're sampling and bringing in and you can really manipulate
right.
in four different ways. I think that's a really great point in a DJ that should be using it. But yeah, it's not like you and I DJ, it's not for us.
Right. Like you want the Ferrari. Give me what I want. Give me my equipment. You want the Toyota Corolla? Sure, you could put an analog control thing in front of me or some controller that I don't use, but like I'm going to not be as good if you give me my gear. You've
made good points because if I was booking you, I wouldn't have not done my homework if I gave you an analog mixer.
Well, yeah, like anywhere we're getting booked out of state, you're getting my rider that's telling you what I want anyway. So like...
Right.
I wouldn't be in that situation pretty much. Or most any DJ that's traveling, they're going to ask you what equipment you want to play on.
Right. Right. I think there is a place for it.
Yeah, there's definitely a place, but I think it's more of like a niche thing.
I think it's because I'm into the style of music where this works.
For that's you, why. It 1,000% works.
I enjoy the style of music, like Tone Setta. Also into the same style of music where this mixer works. And you are not into that style of music.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work in the world that you work in.
Right.
Right. So, and that's where this and that's always where this argument comes about across like anybody who's a DJ has had this argument. Their one friend's probably, you know, is you and is the quick mixer and is not into, you know, the Afro and the Latin and the garage house and all that stuff. And then there's me who loves a long format. It's like,
you'll play an 8 minute track and bring in like the vocals of another track and let it ride and take the bass out and put the bass in on the new song. And like, if that's how you DJ, yeah, this is perfect.
Right. Like I love that. Like I love to be able to mix for 3 full minutes straight. Like, you know what I mean?
If I play a 3 minute song, that's like long for me.
Yeah. Yeah. But you would never play those styles. And that's why.
Yeah.
You know? So that's kind of where the conversation lies.
Can I tell you a good rotary mixer story?
It's going to be DJs.
So I'm probably like 3 years into DJing nightlife. I've been playing like my local clubs and I'm trying to get booked at this place called DJs down the shore. We talked about it on the show. If you're from out of town, it's like the go-to EDM house music spot at the Jersey Shore. And so I get booked there. And first time I go in there, they're like, yeah, this is the mixer. It's a, I don't even know what it was, rotary mixer. And I'm like,
what
the fuck?
It had to be a rain rotary.
Rain rotary. There's no crossfader because they have it taped shut so you can't use it. And, you know, at the time, like, I don't think quick mixing was super popular, but it was one of the ways that helped me stand out.
Yeah.
As far as like keeping high energy and playing a lot of music and running through songs quickly, it was like maybe just getting popular then, or maybe I just had no idea what I was doing. And that was just something that I was doing that started working for me. But they put me in this room. I'm nervous to begin with because like every DJ in our market wants to play here. I'm young. I don't have a ton of experience. I'm really only used to playing on a 900, maybe like here and there with some rain mixers, and they're all up faders and cross faders. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm super nervous about playing this room to begin with. There's like all these people that I look up to standing right next to me in the booth. I need to do a good job in order for me to work here again. And you put this mixer I have no fucking clue how to use in front of me. Like, I didn't get a chance to play with it beforehand. So the first time I've ever played on a rotary mixer was at the time the biggest set of my DJ career.
Right.
And I'm sure I sounded way worse than what I would have sounded like. But I guess I sounded good enough to keep it going, because actually that was another one of those situations where I brought mad people to that gig. So even if I sucked, I showed value in another way. So it's like, yeah, Cream didn't mix the cleanest, but at least he brought 30 people or 50 people or however many people, and they were all wearing Cream t-shirts. I remember the promoter like, man, you had a lot of people come out. They were all rocking the t-shirts, huh? I'm like, fuck yeah, Bob, let's go. I gave every bartender that worked there a t-shirt, and I gave every one of my friends and every person that I knew a t-shirt. Like, I literally bought the box and handed out every single one for that one gig.
Jeez.
So yeah,
well, rotary mixer. It's all the bartenders. It's all the bartenders out there. We're not giving free
then
t-shirts
out. Other rotary mixer story, like trying to play hip hop on a rotary mixer. Oh, that's like see, a that's whole other ridiculous. Thing. I'm trying to play open format on a rotary mixer. Like,
yeah, I don't know who booked you for that one, but that's ridiculous.
Ask Mikey Ferrari about that one.
I'm sure. I'm sure that hybrid one that had the crossfader on it. Like, maybe you can get away with some shit on that.
Yeah,
maybe.
it had a crossfader trying, like, but yeah, trying to play hip hop where it was like, I don't know, I guess I'm just blending today, totally.
Yeah.
And even that's hard because, you know, it's maximum 8 bars you're blending for hip hop.
Right. And then I know that those rotaries, they have a lot of tension on those volume knobs. They're like heavier.
Somebody told me that I'm DJing on a Rain mixer. Like, the Rain mixers, the rotary mixers, the controllers, they can all go in the same pile that gets lit on fire to me. I just have no interest in ever touching any of them ever again. I don't care. I don't care about the technology. I don't care about the newest and greatest. Like, just give me what I like and what I'm good at using.
I don't like controllers, but there are certain ones that I've gotten used to. You get used to shit after an hour.
Yeah,
anyway,
they're fine.
30 minutes.
There's some controllers that maybe like, you know, I'm really like, fine. You go from the Corolla to the Lexus, but it's definitely not the Ferrari.
All right. Oh, man. Love a good rotary mixer rant.
Yeah, I mean, anything else you want to say about the rotary mixer? Like, you should definitely go out of your way to try and take a look at that thing and just play
it. I am. I'm going to go check it out. I mean, it's astronomically priced, and does it make sense to just throw that thing in my office to mess around with? Not really.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm interested in the tension, how they switch tensions with how fast you're up, that you're going up in volume on each knob. They say if you go up quick, it's easier to go up on. And then if you're slow mixing, then it creates more tension the slower you turn the knob, which is crazy technology to me. So you can, they're saying, so you can slam a record in if you want to, and it doesn't create all that tension that like an old rotary would have. It adjusts with how fast you're using it. So I thought that was a really neat feature as well. I don't know. I want to play with it.
No, it seems like they really like took it to the next level where I'd be interested to see how many venues or if we see any videos of some bigger artists using them. I would imagine it's going to be your older DJs that have been in the game a long time that want to test it out, or you're just gearheads who are into trying all the stuff, which is, you know, if that's you, like, that's dope. You should want to go try it. Like, it's something new and different, and it seems like they've made it better than the previous one. So definitely worth checking out. The other thing I'd be interested in to know is how many DJs listening to this podcast have even ever seen a rotary mixer, let alone used one.
Guys, if you've made it this far along in the episode, in the comments below, let us know if you've ever seen one, number one, and what you, we all know what everybody prefers. So I'm not even going to ask that question, but let us know if you've even seen a rotary mixer out there in the wild. I'd be interested to know how many people have actually seen one in a booth anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, our DJs have seen him at one of our venues because it was in there for a long time. But
still sitting there. I still think they run the main through there before the sound quality. And when you go into that room, that sound quality is actually a little better. It's fuller.
Yeah, I believe
that. That's what it creates. It creates that full, like really full sound. It's like when I throw on a record when I'm here, when I'm home.
Right.
Even though I'm running it through my Sonos, it still has this more full sound.
Right.
You know? So...
All right.
Anyway,
couple things to promo. B3, our monthly networking event, 2 weeks away. It is Tuesday, April 9th, Hoboken, New Jersey. We have not announced who the special guest artist is just yet, but we should probably be putting that out this week.
Yep.
Anybody tri-state area, we'd love to have you come through. If you want to jump on the decks, I will be in the building for this one. I was on vacation for the last one, so I'm excited to meet you guys, hear some DJs play. The other, are we going to talk Grow My DJ Business? Are we going to kind of, you going to hold off on that? What do you want to do?
Let's hold up. We're an hour and 9 minutes in. Let's hold off on it.
All right, so we're going to hold off on Grow My DJ Business for another
week. You might see an extra video come out here, some, you know, talking about Grow My DJ Business a lot. So stay tuned.
All right, guys. Appreciate you listening to this episode. All the episodes that me and Gary like aren't totally sure what we're going to talk about go longer than anything we have planned.
It's true.
Thank you guys for listening to this episode. We'll talk to you guys soon.
All right, guys.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Get Down podcast. If you enjoy our show and find the topics entertaining or helpful in any way, we would greatly appreciate if you could subscribe, rate, and review our podcast wherever you listen to it. We want to help more DJs, and subscribing, rating, and reviewing the show is the best way for us to do that. We appreciate all the love so far. Thanks for listening, guys.